So regular listeners to this show will be well aware by now that our remit is a little on the broad side. We think of this show as a moment when we drill down to find the meaning behind the journeys we take, the cities and buildings we live in, our homes, our kitchens, our gardens, and our lounge rooms. It's kind of a holding up of the fabric of day-to-day life to see it a little bit better. So let's get literal. What about the actual fabric of our day-to-day life? What about its design when it comes to cloth and material and textiles that surround us? Julie Patterson is a textile designer and owner of a company called Cloth Fabrics. She's also the author of a fabulous new book about iconic fabric designs called Cloth Bound. Michael Leck is the curator of the Caroline Simpson Library at the Sydney Living Museum. Both are experts, enthusiasts, and passionate purveyors of textiles. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm going to start with you, Julie. I know you trained in textiles in London. Give us a sense of the contrast you found between the scene here and back in the UK.
Well, 20 years ago, it was quite a different place, Australia, design-wise, for me at least. I'd trained in textiles in the 80s in the UK, and there's a long tradition of textiles back there, and everyone's specialised into, you know, woven or printed or even furnishing printed fabric, which is what I did. So there was lots and lots and lots of specialisation because there was lots of jobs in the different areas. I came out to Australia and everyone did a bit of everything, so there was no specialisation whatsoever. So you had to be a bit of a jack of all trades, and I realised this was an opportunity for me to bring my specialisation and put my shingle out and say, "Hey, I'm a designer, and I do furnishing fabric, and go for it." And people responded. The industry responded very, very well straight away. So it was quite different, quite a different marketplace altogether.
One of the things in your book that's very clear is the way in which in the 20 years that you've been running your business, that has kind of evolved. But before we get to that evolution, Michael, I'm curious, that lack of specialisation in textile design in Australia that Julie discovered in the early 80s, what do you think would have led to that? Tell us a bit about the history of textile design in this country.
Well, in the 19th century, there really was no textile design. There was a few companies making things like blankets, for instance, but it was only in the 20th century that textile design dawned on the country in a way. The English really were just too good at making textiles in the 19th century. They're too efficient. They made the textiles at low prices, and so Australia, with a small market, just couldn't compete. 20th century, the textile designers are in their infancy. They're trying to start up. It's difficult to start up, and so companies that do begin, well, like Julie experienced, people working for them had to be jack-of-all-trades. They had to understand not just design, but they had to understand the chemistry of mixing dyes and sourcing the cloth and all sorts of things.
Well, one of the things that strikes me as a novice in this area is that distinction between made by hand and the kind of mass-produced. I mean, one of the things in Australia in the 19th century, of course, must have been the lack of that kind of big industrial-level machinery that was doing a whole lot of this fabric stuff. Is that part of how a more artisanal approach comes about?
For me, well, when I first started, I was a designer selling designs on paper. This was pre-computers. And I was selling them to industry to get them produced offshore. Usually at that stage it was Pakistan, and then occasionally it went to South Africa. And then I lost all control. The copyright went with that fabric, that purchase. And then so the design would come back very, very manufactured for a mass market. And I realised for me personally that there was an opportunity to produce locally. So I've done that ever since. I use a local it's a hand screen printer in Wagga, actually, Wagga Wagga. And I realised that there was an opening for me to do that then that is still there now. And I think it's even more prevalent now than it was then. But it was a complete contrast for me. So they're two different things altogether. But there's more, I think, for me personally, more authenticity in doing it by hand.
One of the things that you tease out so beautifully in your book is the way in which the handmade is what sits at kind of in the artistic realm.
Yeah.
You say textiles sit at the practical end of contemporary art.
Yeah.
And you're interested in kind of blurring that boundary between the artistic and the practical.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the thing about design, isn't it? Going back to my childhood in growing up in the 70s in the UK with Margaret Thatcher reigning supreme, she was the one that we said, get yourself a job, not to me personally, but everyone generally. And I thought how I interpreted that was being an artist was a bit indulgent, and so I had to earn myself a living. So I became a designer from a very early, in my mindset, from a very early age. And that's the only way to earn a living. And so the closest thing to being an artist in the design field to me, I thought, was being a textile designer. So that's my sort of way into being as creative as I could be within a design realm.
I have to be honest, Julia, I imagine many inspirations being cited in this interview. Margaret Thatcher wasn't high up my list of expectations. That's I thought you'd zag. I'm interested, though, you've made the move to Australia, and clearly in your work, the Australian landscape plays a really big part. Why has it been so important to you?
Well, it's so amazing in comparison to, I mean, the British landscape, it's about contrast, isn't it? It's about what you know and what's familiar to me. The Australian landscape, I've been here 25 years now, and it is familiar to me, yet it's not, because I was born in the UK, and the light there is flatter and greyer, and the plants are more delicate and smaller, and I'm struck every single time by the strength of and robustness of this country, and I love it. And for me, maybe it's my personality that suits Australia more. I feel I've got quite a robust personality, I think. But I feel translating the Australian landscape and its flora and fauna is much more up my alley than doing that in the UK.
Sorry to interrupt, Julie, but give us some specific examples from your design. You know, do you have a favourite that is drawn specifically from the environment here?
For instance, the Banksia. Banksia plant. It's one of my favourite designs. It's back in the UK, I was trained in doing watercolours and, little delicate drawings, and I could never imagine a Banksia plant for me. I couldn't ever see it translated using watercolours. So I was inspired by Margaret Preston. She was one of the first artists I came across, and the way she translated with her paper cut stencils and her lino prints and woodcuts, she used the Banksia plant. She translated it beautifully and strong. And I say it's quite a masculine strength to her work. And as soon as I saw her work in the museum, I just thought, I've got it. That's the way I need to interpret the Australian landscape, with strength and depth. Yeah.
Michael, obviously interest in Australian motifs has really kind of ebbed and flowed, hasn't it, in the history of textile design in this country. I mean, from what I understand, in the 1930s, kind of Australiana, as we know it now, really kind of came to the fore. Why was that in Australian textiles?
You're right about it coming to the fore, and there were a few reasons. Firstly, the technical colleges from the late 19th century were starting to produce a whole lot of commercial artists, designers. Societies of arts and crafts were emerging in every state, and their focus was really on that Australiana, on using Australian motifs in all sorts of craft, and that included printed textiles. And lastly, screen printing really emerged as a force by the 1930s. Before that, if you were going to print by hand, you needed to use wood blocks and stencils, and they were a lot more cumbersome. Screen printing was easier to use, it was cheaper and more efficient in a way. And so you start getting some small companies emerging that really focus on the Australian landscape.
Tell us a bit about a couple of those, Mike. I mean, I know Francis Burke, for example, in the 40s.
That's right.
And
yes.
For decades after that, did a whole lot of prints using marine life as a regular motif.
That's right. Francis Burke was a Melbourne textile producer. She started off in 1937. Her company was Burway Prints, and then it became Francis Burke Prints. She got inspiration from all sorts of areas, but she did have a lot of marine life in her work. And one of the reasons was she had a holiday house on the Great Ocean Road. So she used to drive down there and, you know, experience the environment. Another company in Sydney was a company called Annan Fabrics. And Julie mentioned Margaret Preston before. Margaret Preston was a great influence on textile producers like Francis Burke, and on Nance McKenzie, who was one of the principals of Annan Fabrics in Sydney at Mossman, not just in the Australian flora and fauna, but in Aboriginal-inspired prints as well.
I was going to, off the back of that, Julie, one of the things that really interested me about your career is you spent quite a bit of time in Central Australia.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the inspiration you took both from Indigenous practice but also from that part of the world?
Yes, it was quite a significant experience for me at the time. I hadn't to that point really incorporated my art practice on a direct influence to my design practice, and going out to the centre of Australia and to meet I went to about 11 different art communities, Indigenous communities around there, and met lots and lots of artists, and I was amazed at the way they just sat, particularly the women, because that's who I dealt with mostly. They just sat quietly on the floor and just did their work, and the way they spoke about it, and it was like a daily, it was just ordinary for them, you know. It wasn't anything spectacular. It was just methodical and ordinary and calm and slow and mindful. It was one of the first mindful experiences, I suppose, I've noticed. And since then, that stayed with me, that describing the landscape in storytelling and with a sort of a bit of a viewpoint from the air. So you can see, although those women weren't flying, but they had an amazing ability to see distance in their imagination, you know, so their motifs became aerial, almost aerial perspectives. All those sorts of things inspired me to record my daily life like they were doing, really.
Just finally then, as we finish up, you've just spent your time looking at kind of 20 years of that business and 20 years of textile design in this country. What's coming next? What are the current trends as you see them?
Well, I think it's all still very much about sustainability, about authenticity, about natural fibres. People are less inclined, I think, to want perfection. That, you know, we're all accepting finally that we're getting old, and you know, that we've got lines, and those lines mean that we've lived an interesting life. And it's the same with your fabric. Fabric lives and breathes, so it's having that imperfection and living with the rough and ready. You know, it's like I always refer to it as your favorite pair of jeans. You love those jeans because you wear them all the time. That to me is good design. If they're worn in, you've loved them, and I think that's what the trend is towards, is accepting imperfection.
Julie, you're speaking to me. This is my language here. The comfort with imperfection is where, yes, I live and breathe. I think we can definitely see something there. I've been speaking with textile designer Julie Patterson and curator Michael Leck. Julie's book, Clothbound, is out now from Murdoch Books. And while we're on the topic of all things material, we're putting together a story for a few weeks' time that we need your help on. We're interested in the experience of buying one's first suit. Maybe it was for work or a funeral or a wedding. We want you to let us know about that crucial sartorial coming-of-age experience. Drop us an email via the webpage or leave your thoughts on the Facebook page. You're listening to Blueprint for Living on RN and across the Asia Pacific on Radio Australia. Coming up later on the show, we ask, would a new kitchen change your life?
There is this hope that once my kitchen's finished, I will become a better cook who makes organic food for my children all the time and never buys takeaway again.
What happened to making peace with imperfection, I say? Lawyer turned cookbook guru and TV presenter Adam Liao explores the idea of the dream kitchen. But before that, the lowdown on what to read and watch for this long weekend.